How are we doing now? There are a few things. There are a few things I would like to mention just in passing, having nothing to do with a lecture. One of those things, very amusingly, has to do with the state of Scientology, the world around. The fact it's very amusing because Scientology is actually getting to be the organization 3 feet back of society's head. And that's really what this organization is. That's why I say to newspaper reporters when they turn up, I say, "You see that flight of stairs?" And they say, "Yes." I say, "Well now, self-propulsion is better than jet propulsion." We actually couldn't care less where publicity is concerned. What gives us the brightest look and the most enjoyable chuckle is to see ourselves quoted so broadly on so many fronts, to have had a finger in so many pies which are now being eaten with great avidity without the least idea that we had anything to do with them. Cartoons appearing in the Washington papers, for instance, which start talking avidly about voteless D.C., the governor of Maryland and people claiming that Washington had better not be under the federal government and so on. There's a tremendous amount of yickle-yackle going on in this city right here, which unfortunately we had a little hand in our own way. Any one of us, the world around, start these little circles going outwards and hope they don't become tidal waves too far out. They sometimes begin to look like it or take on the proportions of very large waves. For instance, you may not be aware of the fact that the doubling of Hungarian refugee quotas has anything to do with us. There are a lot of things going on you wouldn't know, really, that had anything to do with us at all. But did you know that the entirety of Hungarian refugee mental health is in the hands of Scientology at this moment? That sounds pretty wild and pretty wide. One of our boys walked into the Hungarian Refugee Center, found money in envelopes, the very fatal thing for a Scientologist to find. Money in envelopes which isn't being used in any way. He believes in the use of the stuff. It's an aberration. And he found people saying, "What do we do now? And where are all these refugees going to come from? And what do all these donations mean? And what should they be expended for?" This was over in Europe. And he right away said, "Processing, of course." So we made sure that considerable portions of it were laid aside for processing for these very hysterical people. And Scientologists are now on this job. And there is a group, many of them got as far as Camp Kilmer without going through, and they are causing a little bit of trouble at Kilmer. They're very hysterical. They turn around and point to each other and say, "He's a secret policeman," and "He's a secret policeman," and they're very much up in the air. This group is acting quite differently than groups which have been through group processing by Scientologists. The 1 feat of the Olympic Games, where this fellow suddenly got up and ran some untold number of yards and broke so many world records and that sort of thing, he had been audited. Did you remember this in the Olympic Games? That one weird thing that happened. The runner. Nobody said anything about Scientology. Britain did not take the Olympic Games across the boards, but came out of the basement. Had always been in the basement in certain team actions, and this time moved way up from her customary position, but didn't win, and outside of this one spectacular action, nothing else very spectacular occurred. But next year, pardon me, next Olympic Games, better luck. In other words, we had the coaching of the British Olympic team this last year to a very marked degree. One of the things, we came in too late. And only after many, many weeks had passed did we realize that we should have taken full authority for the training and actually did become then the full training authority. Up to that time, we were sort of standing around on the fringes saying, well, we'll patch them up, letting their regular training go on. And their regular training interfered enormously with their processing and so on. For instance, you take their riding team. The one thing that they had been told is that a horse is a complete uncertainty. There's no way that you can make a horse do anything predictable. You can learn everything there is to learn about riding. This is a direct quote from their riding masters. Learn everything there is to learn about riding. Learn everything there is to know about tracks, steeplechases. Learn everything there is to know about judges and get in excellent physical condition. There's one thing that you won't ever know anything about, and that's the horse. And the Scientologist who took this over said, Burke, leap, what do I do now? Well, he did it. He took them out to the stable and made them hold horses still. That's all he did. It got very funny after a while. The team members could go into the stable and look at a horse, you know, and hold him still, and the horse would just go, complete freeze, see? And then stop holding him still, and the horse would go on eating in the manger, and then hold him still again and stop. He said it was a very weird phenomenon. After they had done that for a while, why, he had to untrain them. He had to untrain them from practically, well, I suppose 90% of what they had learned to do before he could get started in any direction at all. Because they had been trained in the philosophy that discipline alone achieves training. And games consist of freedom, purposes, and barriers, and do not consist totally of barriers. And so an athlete trained totally with barriers is not a good athlete. And the reason the world's records are what they are is this emphasis on barriers. And another emphasis taking place today is on coaching from outside the team. The team itself can never make up its mind what it's going to do. They're getting radio equipment, by the way, and building it into the helmets of quarterbacks so that coaches on the sidelines can tell a quarterback what to do and that sort of thing. This is in the direction of losing games. This will lose more games than you can shake a stick at. Now, it's quite all right to have a conference on what you do with the pre-clear, but we have learned that if you tell everybody that is auditing exactly how he holds his pinky at any given moment of the session, so that he takes no responsibility for the case himself, you don't get results. I don't care what technique you use. Do you understand that? So the existing philosophy in the HGC at this time is, I'll tell you anything you want to know about any case you want to talk about. But it's your job to raise the aptitude curve and to raise that IQ. Very funny, but it results in tremendously better results. In other words, it's their pre-clear. That pre-clear belongs to the auditor, no matter how much coaching goes on, don't you see? We have in Scientology a little difficulty along this line, which merely consists of this. There doesn't seem to have been several tracks on which life formed itself up. Life formed itself up on one main line of postulates and agreements. And this one main line of postulates and agreements is Scientology. And that is what it is. Not what I make it or you make it. It is what it is. And these are the things with which we deal. And some of us know those things better than others. And so there is a subject. But what subject is it? It is the subject of what life has been up to. It's the subject of the kingpin center postulates on which life has oriented itself. And the discovery of those things and their isolation from masses of other material as the important material, and then without alteration, the delivery of that information to other people has been the study of Scientology. There could be many such studies. All you'd have to do is alter it a little bit. And if you alter the postulates which exist on the main line of life in telling others about them, they won't get results. Not because you were right or wrong, but because life did follow a certain channel, a certain concatenation, a certain series of basic agreed upon postulates, which then did make the pattern which you find in the preclear. My discussions of technique, by the way, are all of them direct reportings. They are not my conclusions to amount to anything as conclusions drawn from this. But when I tell you that it's an axiom, it's an axiom. When I tell you that it's that, that is what has been observed and has been carefully sorted out, and it hasn't been altered for any pitch. That is one of the reasons Scientology has a difficulty in agreeing with an intensely aberrated society, because the society has given each one of these things a further complication and a further pitch. And so that if we take these things and then don't say what we observe, but say what we would like somebody else to think we had observed, we would have a very aberrated subject, and it would be an unworkable subject. Now here we have around the world a great many activities in Scientology. And these activities are not necessarily coordinated, but, oddly enough, happen to be fairly well coordinated. Only in areas where three or four different units have themselves gotten to sparring over the possession of the area do we have any failure to progress. In other words, several separate groups spar with each other, not about the subject or how it's done, but about how they are conducting their progress into the society. And only in such an area do we have a failure to disseminate well into that society. In other words, the only person that can hold back, get this please, the only person that can hold back Scientology is a Scientologist. He's the only one that would be smart enough. You see that? Now, he starts arguing with somebody on the other side of town, and you got a couple of powerhouses going to work, and that's that as far as action in the area is concerned. All the action is absorbed in combat, internecine warfare. Now, this does not happen very often. It does not happen very broadly, and is not that thing most responsible for a failure in dissemination in many quarters of the world. The thing most responsible for non-dissemination is lack of books. Now that we are getting books in other languages, dissemination is taking place much more easily and readily. But as long as all books were in English, we were having a difficulty in any other than English-speaking countries. We were having considerable difficulty. But once books in other languages began to be printed, circulated, why then we began to make progress. It's a very funny thing to single out at this time the exact means of progress and to find it's as simple as it is, and that we have missed it occasionally is very remarkable. But to discover that I myself missed it and didn't know it, having done it, is reprehensible. I just won't put up with it at all. Now that is the truth. That is the truth of the matter. That we had a method of dissemination which was perfect. And it was so perfect we didn't notice it. And as long as it was continuing, we were very successful. And as soon as it ceased to continue to any degree, then all of us felt its lack. None more so than the central organizations. What was that? Well, it has to do with an agreement in the society concerning a book. A book evidently knows more than a person. And the society has this agreement so solidly that the society best progresses if vanguarded by a book. In other words, we vanguard any operation with a book, we got it made. Doesn't matter much about the book, as long as it's got a little mass. But I had to discover this. A writer, you see, is the fantastic part of this story. That is the unbelievable part of this story, that it had to be discovered. But it did have to be discovered. About a year ago, there was a sudden downward dive in terms of activity in the British office. All of a sudden, no action. The income of the office hit an exact level and stayed there. Just didn't move. And we sent out mailings, and we wrote pamphlets, and we talked to people, and we bettered service, and we streamlined the office. We did everything we could think of, and we didn't, for about 8 months, change the income of that office £1. In other words, we sent out mailings, brochures, we made public lectures, we did everything we could think of, and nothing changed it. And one day I found out something. That the exact moment of drop-off of activity in the British office coincided with the British publishers' cessation of distribution of books. Now, up to that time, two books were in distribution in Great Britain. Dianetics, Modern Science, Mental Health, British edition, watered down. They liked the American edition much better. And Self-Analysis in Dianetics. And those two books, hardcover books, were being published by Derek Ridgway in London. And Derek Ridgway was making so much money that he couldn't find anything to do, so he had to make that scarce. And not because of those two books, but because of several other factors, these two books remaining the two solvent items in his inventory, he went bankrupt. And the books were pulled out of the bookstores. The books were not furnished anymore to the bookstores. And this was an automatic action. This had been going on ever since the British office had been in operation, that these books had been in bookstores. And the British office didn't think it had anything to do with these books being in bookstores. And so never paid any attention, and I didn't pay any attention to it, when these books disappeared out of the bookstores. But the books disappeared out of the bookstores, there went the activity curve, right down steep. We put books back in circulation again, and the activity curve went just like that. Within 3 weeks. How do you like that? Now, I have a little announcement to make about books, as long as we're on the subject, and that is something I have not broadly announced, although it's been mentioned here and there. And that is that Dianetics, Modern Science of Mental Health, American edition, is now totally owned in its plates, copies, and all other things by the Washington organization. Thank you. It's taken very nearly 6 years to bring that book home because the book was a valuable property. And we managed to buy it back only because the people who were owners of it had taken to publishing Bibles. And they didn't have to pay the author of that any royalty. And thought they had a very good swindle. And they were willing to separate themselves from Dianetics Modern Science and Mental Health. They told us lies about how fast it was selling, but we found out how fast it was selling by the number of books which they had on hand at the beginning of the negotiation and the number of books which were finally delivered to us. Obviously, the missing number of books were those books that had been sold in the interim. In other words, that book, all these years later, still sells like mad in the stores, if they can get it, if they know about it. 6 years old, and this book is still selling like a bestseller. And we took that out of the bookstores accidentally. In other words, by transferring it from that publisher to Washington, we stopped that distribution action unwittingly. And the moment it was stopped completely was the moment that the Washington operation did that. Neat. Neat as you please. You say the people in the bookstores are not necessarily the people that you see as auditors. No, I'm afraid there's something mystic and magical about the whole thing. If the books are in the bookstores, we do well. If the books are not in the bookstores, why? And there's no reason to get statistical about it. It's just happened to us now too many times. All right, we have Scientology, Fundamentals of Thought. We have Dianetics, Modern Science and Mental Health. And we have Dianetics 55 and several other books which we're putting back into the bookstores. And we're putting them back in as rapidly as we can. But it is a difficult thing in trying to catch up to this comlag. But more important than that, we have discovered a method of dissemination which is very, very worthwhile. That method of dissemination is to put advertisements not to come and get processed or how nice Dianetics and Scientology is, but just to put book ads in magazines which sell copies of books. And that is the perfect ad. Fate magazine came out just a few days ago. Here's a little magazine. Doesn't amount to much. Had a little ad. And right away, the orders are starting to slap into the distribution center. Bangity, 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 bangity. In other words, all you have to do is advertise a book on Dianetics or Scientology. For sale, write in and get it. There it is, and more or less what it is, and you got it, made. Big magazines, no. In the first place, the cost of advertising in large magazines is not warranted. You probably don't understand how advertising works in big magazines. But advertising in big magazines is not to keep the public sold on anything, but to keep advertising agencies solvent. That's really its basic purpose. The Saturday Evening Post charges $10,000, $15,000, $25,000, I don't know what a page these days. But if we were to put a page ad in the Saturday Evening Post, its advertising value, just as such, would come to nothing. I mean, we'd maybe sell 5 books. No, that isn't what you do. Your big ads in big magazines is not the answer. Big radio programs, things, those are not the answer. If you put on a radio program, just put one on to sell a book. Don't put one on to sell anything else. In other words, a book will vanguard, but just talking about it won't. All right. If you put on anything, sell a book. But it's the number of times you place the ads for specific books that then results in interest. So I'm going to ask this Congress to do something for me. There are tremendous numbers of books which never appear, or magazines rather, which never appear on newsstands. They never come close to newsstands. I know of a half a dozen magazines offhand which are trade journals. You know, the National Plumbers Weekly or something like that. They're trade journals of one kind or another, and they're not sold on newsstand publication. And there is no effective way I know of to assemble these magazines except to ask our own people broadly that if they know of any or they see any in dentist's offices or chiropractor's offices or something like that, stick them in their pocket and send them to me. You got that? This is the sort of magazine which never goes on the newsstand. You never see it for sale in the drugstore. It's a mystic magazine that is issued to 5,000 members, and it sells 5,000 copies by subscription. It never gets near newsstands. Well, it never gets near us, and we never hear about it either. There's such a magazine, and a little magazine called Orion. I possibly never heard of this magazine at all. I know it must be a good magazine and a good medium, however, because I reached into it the other day, and here's three old pal science fiction writers sitting in between its pages. Only, of course, the public there doesn't know they're science fiction writers or anything else. They think they're mystics. It's quite interesting. Now, here are these fellows, writing little articles and so on and sending them out broadly, and their material never appears on any of the newsstands of the country at all. How many such magazines are there? Well, I don't know. But each one of them has advertising space, and its advertising space is relatively cheap. And furthermore, when you buy an ad, they rather expect you to give them a small article. Now, how many of these magazines are there in the country? I don't know, but this is our target. This is the target. In the next 4 months, we intend to place dozens and dozens and dozens of ads in these magazines. Each ad simply sells a book. That's all it does. It doesn't try to tell anybody anything else. It just sells a book. And we get the books out into the society and get them vanguarding again. And before 1957 is over, I can tell you now by experience, which I've actually had, that we'll have this thing back up to a roaring prairie fire again. No difficulty. We've got the answer. The answer was too obvious. I told you, you had the fellow mock up a cube and mock up a cube and mock up a cube, see? This is too simple an answer. How did it go out in the first place? Well, it went out in the first place because I wrote a book to put down what I knew about it, because I got tired of writing all I knew about it in every letter I wrote to every inquiry. And I gave this book to a fellow who operated a psychiatric textbook house, not because I trusted him or knew him, but because he said he'd like to publish it, and I said, well, good, then I am relieved of the burden of actually printing this book. Boy, it relieved me of the burden, all right. 6 years later, I got it back. During those 6 years, it was never published or distributed or advertised. Most fabulous thing in the world. Why should they advertise it? They've told me a couple of times. It keeps selling nicely. Why should anybody know about it? I mean, the book keeps selling. That was perfectly logical to them. It was merely a stable article which went on selling, that they had to work on the books that didn't sell. In other words, the publishing philosophy is to take a book that doesn't sell, and because it isn't admired, make it persist. Well, the book picture then, the book picture is easily the answer. That is the answer. The picture of a book going around, being circulated, being distributed in whatever fashion, is the picture of an alive community and a live group. If you were to take everybody who would ever come to your group and give them outright a book, Scientology Fundamentals of Thought, just mail it out to them, your group would build back faster than anything you had before seen. We've already tried this. We've already made this experiment. The book gets around. It's handed from this person to that person. But that is not anywhere near as good as selling them. Now you tell me. Well, it's the same answer that if you process somebody for nothing, he doesn't much appreciate it. If he has to pay you something for being processed, then he too could contribute. Because contribute, what can he contribute to, is a more interesting operation to him than being contributed to, always. Do you see that? By failing to let people buy a book, you are to some degree depriving them of the game. So if you were to know of a little weekly that came out every Friday and carried the Safeway shopping list, you know, and they'd sell you a little 2x2 inch square in which you could put some ad copy for the sale of a book with your post box on it, merely saying that they should send you a dollar and you'd send them a book, you'd find something very interesting. That it takes 25 book sales to make one Scientologist. Sell 25 books, you got a Scientologist. One of those people, on the average, this is a broad average, one of those people will all of a sudden spark up enough to do something in the society. That tells us something very interesting. It tells us 1/25 by this system alone, then, of the people in the United States could be brought into an interest in Scientology. That's statistics talking, which aren't true. They're just statistics, but that's the way it looks. But how many books would you have to sell? Only 167 million. That's hardly any books at all, because you'd insist the little kids have one, too. And if you did that, you would have changed this society quite markedly. You would have put some shoes on a vast number of people who I think could use some. AEC, for instance, engineers could undoubtedly use shoes. The reason they have such heavy security is because people get in there, liable to get in there and find out what they have in cages. You don't think that's true. You don't think that's true. But I don't know any other reason for security on all information why you must never go into grounds which are totally devoted to running bulldozers up and down and digging holes in the ground. There's building a reactor up in a heavily populated area around Detroit right now, somewhere up there. And they won't let the public on the grounds because it's a heavy security rating for the area. What's happening inside the grounds? They're digging some holes. The first time I ever heard of a hole needing that much security. Just creation of a mystery. No, there are various things which would happen in the society if a good, broad, well-thought-out book distribution activity was engaged upon. I think you will agree with me very much so concerning that. Now, what is the responsibility an individual has when he knows something? He has a good certainty on something. Does he have any responsibility now at all? On a first dynamic basis, all worked out on the first dynamic, no. Has no responsibility of any kind whatsoever. But there are 7 more dynamics. And the ratio is 7 to 1 that he better tell somebody about it. If he sees a society or a culture going downhill, and he simply sits back on a spectator basis and watches it go downhill, although he himself has an intimate stock in it, has a good share of it himself, then I'm afraid that he is not carrying forward his social responsibilities to himself. Just to himself, much less the rest of the dynamics. It's not possible to sit back that way. If you're going to treat something, you should at least define it and we've already said a scarcity of bodies creates something that people call a condition called insanity, that there is no real condition there at all. It is just a fading out. You see that? People who have no further stake in this universe fade out to that point. And that is where they wind up. They don't own anything in the universe. They're seven dynamics short, even though they're one dynamic strong. Except they're not one dynamic strong anymore, because that dynamic goes down to the degree that the other dynamics reduce. You could say that a condition of maladjustment would be extreme irresponsibility on all dynamics, including irresponsibility for self-preservation. Now, that would take it all the way on out, and that would be that. You have to have some responsibility on the remaining dynamics, or you're not alive at all. Scientology could be characterized as just a good game. It might not even be important. It might not even be important at all. But if it isn't important, then we better get our heads together, and we better send an expedition out to some nearby planet to find out if they're ready to start a genetic line. I'm serious. I would just as soon work it on that basis, of look around and find some nearby planet that could be patched up. You know, factually. But it's a matter of either or, I'm afraid. Either put this one in a condition where it can survive, or find one that can be put in a condition in which one would like to live. And if there's any other choice, I don't know about them. If there are any other choices at all, I haven't heard of them. Now, there isn't a choice, unfortunately, for thee or me of, well, let's just sit back and wait to see how it all goes. We've known for years the wrong thing to do about anything. We may not know the right things to do, but by golly, we know the wrong thing to do about any given circumstance or situation. And that's to do nothing. You sit down in any given situation and you think, now what shall I do? There's always one thing that you usually can be sure of. There's one positive certainty that you can have, that it's wrong to do nothing. Now, to people that get tired easily, this is a strenuous viewpoint. It's pretty wild, though, you come to inspect these situations that we say, well, I can't do anything about it. That's no business of mine. Only a busybody would rush in there. And we say, well, all right, I'll do nothing about it. It's come into my awareness now. What shall I do about it? Nothing. Yeah, that's the right answer, is it? Mark it up on the time track. Week by week. Somewhere up the line, because you did nothing, that same situation is going to go whap. You're going to say, what happened? Now, it isn't as coincidental or as pat, because life is much more complicated than we like to indulge in. But it isn't as complicated or as pat as this. You notice that your next door neighbor has a bad tire. Because it's none of your business, you say nothing about it. This is too pat a situation. See? 3 days later, the hospital calls you, and your wife's in the hospital. What is your wife doing in the hospital? She was in an automobile accident. What automobile accident? Well, a tire blew out on a car. What car? Your next door neighbor's car. See, that's too pat. You can follow that line of interaction very easily. That sort of situation doesn't often happen. But I well recall one time, I well recall saying that I had no business whatsoever in a domestic squabble which was going on down the road from where I was living. I said I had nothing to do with it, and I kept myself completely out of it, even though I could have done something about it. See, it had come to my attention, and I could have talked to them, or I could have interested myself. I completely forgot that they were part of the community. I completely forgot this. And one fine day, I was talking to the teacher at a local school. Sitting in the front row were two little kids who couldn't learn. They couldn't study. They were nervous wrecks. And I decided I would do something to help these two little kids. And I didn't find out till the next day that they were the children of the couple that had split up. My action was too late. You see? But I did something about it anyway, whether I really wanted to or not. Now, this is a horrible view because it presupposes a tremendous amount of busybodiness and activity on the part of an individual. But if you want to know why things are off the wheels so far, look how many times nothing was done. And add up in the last 76 trillion years, all the times nothing was done, and you've got the exact problem you have at this minute. You abandon control and responsibility and communication with. You got problems. Lots of them. Because in essence, what is it that you're doing? What is it? Here's a little gadget that somebody has made. It's a very cute little gadget. It says reality, affinity, and communication. And life is life. And any thetan there is alive is a brother or sister of yours. And every time you noticed a situation and didn't do something about it, you omitted that bar. You said, that's gone. And then you expected to have some reality and affinity for life? Do I make my point? It didn't matter whether it was bad or good. Bad or good are just prize people use to make other people act. You see that? They don't exist as such. But something existed, and we said, I'm unwilling to communicate with it. I'm unwilling to do something about it. What is the difference between those two statements? Observably, no difference. I'm unwilling to do something about it. I'm unwilling to communicate with it. What happens to your reality? What happens to your affinity? What happens to the reality and affinity of the other dynamics? You get extreme individuation as a result. It's all right to be an individual. But it's all right to be something else, too. There's nothing wrong with the first dynamic if you've got seven others in good action. There's nothing wrong with being the most important person under the sun if everybody else is just as important as you are. You got that real good? The only thing that you ever object to in important people is because they act so thoroughly too many times on the supposition that everybody else is a crumb. You are important. But you're as important as seven dynamics are important. To you. Now, each one of us has a certain amount of responsibility in this sphere, this universe, whatever size it is. And the number of times we didn't go into communication are the number of times we're out of communication. So we can always say the wrong thing to do is nothing. There's a big atomic bomb. What can I do about the atomic bomb? I'm just me. I'm not anything. Why are you just you? How'd you get to be just you? Well, everybody's broken, and there's five states blowing away out there, and there's drought sweeping through the Middle West, and we have an oversupply of food. I don't know how we mesh these things together. And there isn't enough money to buy products, and the distribution is that, and so forth. And you say, well, I'm just me. I can't do anything. How'd you get to be just you that can't do anything about it? By not doing anything about it, don't you see? Someday, sooner or later, anybody has to turn on the devils that pursue him. Someday. You can turn with processing, but you can also turn with living. By what? By doing something about it. Now, there are not wrong things to do and right things to do to the degree of error that there is nothing to do about it. Can you see that? It is impossible to do something and to be wrong to the degree of doing nothing. Even if you drove the bus into the wall and at the last moment you tried to turn the curve and you drove the bus into the side wall of the mountain and kill 15 people, and boom, and you say, well, if I just hadn't wrenched the steering wheel at last time, they'd all be alive today. Sigh, sigh, sigh. What you picking out that last moment for, huh? How did that ever arrive? Well, probably when you started the bus, the motor sounded awfully funny and the brakes smelled. And you didn't do anything about that, so a little later you did something, and then you say when you did something that you were wrong. Well, people don't like to be pushed around too much with people, so people keep telling people are wrong for acting, moving, and breathing. There are only two crimes in the universe, according to other people. One of those crimes is communicatingness, and the other one is being there. So we have there-ness and communicatingness as the two biggest crimes there are. Those are the two major crimes, according to people who mean you no wellness at all. If you meant nobody any good at all, you would teach him very carefully. You'd say, now, Joe, there are two things that are wrong. One is to communicate, and one is to be there. And don't let me ever catch you doing either one. That would be the end of Joe, wouldn't it? All right, so in essence, when we look over this broad picture of dissemination, and I'm not just talking about that to talk about dissemination, but I started talking about dissemination. I better finish talking about it. When we see a society at large, which is starting to crumble around the edges a little bit, when people are saying, well, what's all this thing about democracy? What's all this stuff? I mean, a vote, actually, what's one vote in 100 million votes? What can that do? Hear people doing that sort of thing. When you see fascism passing for republicanism, when you see various occurrences occurring, tyrannies rising, a little bit here, a little bit there. They get awfully brave if you don't bat them in the head. The time to bat a tyranny in the head is when you can still bat. People at large in this day and time are too prone to wait until it's too tall to reach and they're too small to wiggle. Living requires a little foresight. And if you have a little foresight, you can see what's happening. Now, to communicate to man, about man, or to tell man that he is not so complex, that he is comprehensible, that he can exist, that he can be happy. Telling these things is today almost headline news. I've had fellows look at me and say, "You mean I might be able to understand myself?" And I said, "Well, I don't know about understanding you, but you could certainly understand somebody else." And you say, "I could? No, this is impossible." "You mean my mother, too?" Of course, some fellows are so complex that you put up a simplicity, and like the mental energy does on the white cube that you mock up, the whole environment around him is liable to start folding up on him. Everything goes into commotion. That's one of the interesting things. I used to be able to say, you know, there isn't any reason why you couldn't postulate yourself clear. Well, I can tell you why. Most people find that difficult or adventurous. They say, "All right, I'm a clear. What did I do that for?" Because what happened? They said, "I'm a simplicity." And the second they said, "I'm a simplicity," then all the complexities were let go of, and they started going swat, swat, and mix, mix, and confuse, confuse. Don't you see? In other words, a simplicity seems to invite a complexity, because complexities depend upon simplicities. They collapse them. Always the higher reality is a simplicity. A simplicity always has a higher reality than a complexity. You understand that? If we get two things that we say these two things are real, and one is very complex and one is quite simple, we say which one of these things actually has the higher reality. The question can be answered synthetically merely by saying the simpler thing has a higher reality than the complex thing. And we'll find normally that this rule, in let's say such a thing as engineering design, works. It's a good working principle. Somebody who has the task of inspecting designs, you know, as they go past circuits, designs, and he has to inspect them, and he finally finds one that consists of da, 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 and he has several others that consist of brrr, and five supplementary drawings that both do the same thing, he might feel that neither one of them work. But the funny part of it is just at a glance, he would be more often right than wrong if he simply grabbed the simpler one and developed it, rather than inspect both. See? Because complex things are simply a number of simplicities mismated. And the second you introduce a new simplicity into the situation, it tends to collapse on it a little bit. So you put a book out there. The book is rather simply written, let's say. It's written in English. It's not written in professor. And you put a book out there, and everybody says, "Yak, yak, 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 complex, complex, clash, clash, snap, snap, clash, clash, bang, 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 bang." Boy, be upset only if that does not happen. If that doesn't happen at all, you haven't got hold of simplicity, and you don't have hold of any power either. You would be surprised what would happen on a broad dissemination policy in this country if we didn't do anything else than to set down some of the principles on which we ourselves have a good high subjective reality and a good objective reality, and just set those principles down, put them on a few pages, and scattered them around as little pamphlets or books. Now, you would be amazed. It doesn't sound like there's very much to do there. It doesn't sound like much would happen. On the contrary. Now, there is such a thing as taking a simplicity and making it complex enough to be digestible by complex beings. But you know they never collapse any of their complicated ridges? And so it doesn't change them. If you were to write up Dianetics in a language called Professor, it wouldn't be Dianetics anymore, and it wouldn't collapse professors. One of its greatest values would be gone. You would have been surprised. The literary quality discussion of the book, Dianetics, Modern Science of Mental Health, which goes on to this day. I have had men say, well, I can't read it. I can't read it, you know. Can't, you know, Prince Dad, is can't. It's not written in any English that I understand. That isn't the trouble with it. It isn't the English. He rides straight in on a principle, and his own principles are very complex, built on this principle, and they collapse on it. And he goes, log. Horrible thing has happened to me. So that somebody who is not interested in the field of the mind reads it objectively, and he says, you know, that's good English. That's modern scientific English. A chair of a university once said that that book was the most literary of any scientific books of this century. It's an interesting statement. I don't care whether it's true or not. But he could view it objectively. Why? Because he was safely protected with all the ramifications of literature. He didn't have to think of its principles, and it didn't concern literary principles, so he didn't collapse. So he could just read it. But somebody whose vested interest was in the mind was actually built on these principles and didn't know it. So he was experiencing something painful. He experienced a simplification of his own bank, whether he liked it or not. So you did something for him, even if you made him raging mad. Well, from several different angles then, a dissemination program is of great interest to us. One, it is and should be considered as a number one Scientology project, Third Dynamic. Project Third Dynamic would simply consist of the dissemination of the simplicities of Scientology. Now, that matched up with the aberration that books know and men don't brings us to a position where we should put books out. And a careful study of the thing tells us the way to put those books out is to put them out where people can offer to acquire them. They have to make a bid to acquire them. I wish to tell you, we have a book today which by its simplicity seems to be very successful. And that's Scientology, Fundamentals of Thought. Little book. Thank you. This hasn't been out very long, but it's already out circulating any other book we have. Now, we are striking off a great many of these books. The first print order on it is 25,000 copies. We haven't had those delivered yet. It's pretty hard to assemble that many copies until you get things pretty well streamlined, and these things aren't assembled yet. But we do have many hundreds of them above and beyond our immediate public demand. Now, we have many programs, most of them very complicated, most of them hard to execute, most of them very, very difficult to comprehend in the first place before they're executed. But we do have, and I would like to announce to you right now, a number one Dianetic and Scientology program, which is placing ads in magazines and newspapers throughout the country for the sale of individual volumes to individual buyers. And that is our number one program today. And I know by experience already that that will win. Thank you. Thank you.